The Saturday Supplement on Radio Kerry with Joe McGill.
Good morning, how are you this morning? I'm Joe McGill and you're listening to the Saturday Supplement and I hope I find you well wherever you are listening to us around the world on RadioKerry.ie, on the Radio Kerry app or on the traditional wireless 96 to 98 FM. There's a nice sprinkling of rain around the county to keep the dust down and it's like, you know, do you ever use the garden hose and you've all the different settings if you've those fancy kind of attachments on the top of the hose and you might twist it around to get the different setting. Well, there's a misting one and then there's kind of a shower one. We're halfway between that. You wouldn't want to turn on the power hose one or you'd get a bit of a shock. And speaking about gardening, it's that kind of weather, you know, where the slugs would be out eating your cabbage. And there's various ways you can address that. Kind of environmentally friendly ways. You can put a little beer trap out where the slugs would go in, they'd drink the beer and they'd get paralytic and they wouldn't be able to eat the cabbage. Or you can put a bit of salt around. I'm not an expert gardener now, so you'll have to take what I'm saying with a pinch of that salt I was talking about. Now, I hope you're well this morning. If you want to get in touch with me, you can call us on 066-712-366. Devil's take your calls. You can text the WhatsApp 083-300-300. And on the Saturday Supplement this morning, we'll be hearing about the Milltown History and Heritage Weekend that's taking place right now, and about the Daniel O'Connell Summer School in the year of the 250th anniversary of his birth. And Radio Kerry's Youth Voice series is giving young people around Kerry the chance to explore all the different resources and opportunities for them around the county. It's a joint collaboration between Radio Kerry, Kerry ETB, Tusla and Jigsaw and KCYS. And this morning we're looking at all the resources on offer for young migrants and young members of the LGBT plus community in Kerry. But first, I mentioned that there is a wonderful festival taking place this weekend. It's an exciting programme announced for the inaugural Milltown History and Heritage Weekend. There's a series of walks and talks. And we were talking about a wonderful documentary that was made about Milltown as well recently. And I'm delighted to tell us more about this on the line. We're joined by members of the Milltown History and Heritage Society, Liam O'Sullivan and Owen O'Shea. You're very welcome. How are you doing this morning?
Good morning, Joe.
Good morning, Liam. Owen, if I start with yourself, tell us what does the weekend involve and where did the idea come from? I know it's part of Heritage Week, which there are some wonderful events taking place around this county for.
It is, yeah. It's coinciding with Heritage Week, Joe, as you say, and there's been a great series of events around the county hosted by different historical societies and other groups. So a few months ago, the Milltown History and Heritage Society, which is a relatively new group, decided to, come up with a few events that could form a weekend of different history and heritage-related events that would coincide with Heritage Week and that would, if you like, become a kind of a focal point once a year for putting the focus on and shining a light on the story of Milltown and its past and its heritage. So we actually had our first event last night, which was a presentation on the White Church, which is the ruins or remains of a beautiful 18th century church just on the outskirts of Milltown, which is currently the subject of a conservation management plan with funding from the Heritage Council, and we're trying to look at how what remains of that very important church can be conserved and preserved for future generations. So we had a presentation on the history of the church from Dr. John Knightley, and we then heard from some of the members of a team who are overseeing the plan to conserve the church. led by the architect Carol O'Mahony from Killarney. So that's all very exciting. Thankfully, a few months ago, we were fortunate to secure funding of €25,000 from the Heritage Council for the development of that plan. And that plan will assess and look at the White Church and the site, and I suppose come up with a plan for how that might be, as I say, preserved and looked after into the future. So that's all very, very exciting. So that kicked off our program of events for the weekend last night.
Yeah, and like that is so important, because you'd want these buildings to fall into such disrepair that you can never bring them back to the way they were. So it's important to stop that first and then to preserve them and conserve them for the future. You mentioned Dr. John Knightley there. He's doing a walk tomorrow, and a very knowledgeable man to have doing that. So tell us about what he's going to be talking about.
Yeah, that's right. John would have hosted this walking tour of Milltown a couple of times before, and it proved to be very popular, so we've decided to host it again. So John, at 12 noon tomorrow, John will lead those attending on a walk around the town, identifying some of the important historic sites and talking about the various important aspects of our local heritage. Every building, every part of the town has its own story to tell, very much focused around, I suppose, or pivoting around the domain, the old Godfrey estate. And that's kicking off from 12 noon at the Community Hall. And in fact, over the years, it has attracted as many people from outside Milltown as it has as locals. And that, I suppose, is looking to build on the documentary film that we spoke to you about before, that showcases Milltown and its landscape and how that has changed over the years. So John will be leading that walk and talk, and John is we're very fortunate to have somebody so incredibly knowledgeable about the history and the very unique and rich history that we have in the area.
Yeah, and the last time we were talking on, we were talking about this wonderful documentary you produced about the story of Milltown, the history, and I was blown away by it. It was such stunning visuals, but also the depth of history that goes back so far as well. But just in relation to, I suppose, how was it received? Because I was talking to you before you were going to screen it, and how did the public view it?
Yeah, it's been incredibly well received, Joe. We screened the film initially over two nights in Milltown, and it was viewed by over 300 people in person. And since then, it has been widely viewed on our YouTube channel. We released it on YouTube and online shortly after that. And it really it's a 40-45 minute documentary film that takes, you know, the whole sweep from 6,000 years ago, approximately, right up to the present day. And it's a really, I suppose, it's quite concise in that it introduces people to the various themes and topics. And one of the objectives of this weekend events is to develop some of those themes and go into maybe some more detail on the various elements of the story. And thankfully, the film and the society have been shortlisted for the Kerry Community Awards as a result of the film and the Kerry Community Awards, which are taking place next month, so we're looking forward to that. But I would encourage anyone, even with a passing interest or knowledge of Milltown, to log on and just look up our YouTube channel, Milltown History and Heritage Society, and it's a really, you know, suitable film for all ages, really, and has really been very, very, very well received, and hopefully will stand the test of time as a really good good account and a good summary of the remarkable story of the locality.
Yeah, and you mentioned passing interest, the amount of people that actually pass through Milltown on a daily basis and mightn't realise the history of the place. It's well worth watching. Liam O'Sullivan, when I was growing up, I was into storytelling, and the first tapes I ever listened to, we got them actually. If you collected so many tokens with the Flavin's porridge, you could get an Eddie Linehan tape. And my God, what a storyteller, and he talked about the Gabons there and yeah, Fionn and the Fianna and everything else. And there's an event taking place tonight. Tell us about that.
There is, yeah. We're very lucky to have Eddie join us tonight. And as you said yourself, Eddie is just a phenomenal repository of Irish myth and legend. But I suppose what's less well known about Eddie is he's actually a fantastic oral historian. before he ever told the story himself. He spent 10 years going around listening to the stories in his locality. His training is as a linguist, and that was his original foray into listening to different dialects and listening to different stories. And over those 10 years, he collected such an amount of stories, folklore and history, that he decided he wanted to tell those stories and share those stories. So he's coming to Milltown tonight, and he's going to tell us a selection of the stories he's collected in his over 50 years of story collecting. That's going to be on at 8. It'll be about an hour and a half. And it's a fantastic opportunity, really, for the people of the community of Milltown, maybe to take the emphasis on themselves and go out and listen to the stories that we all here have heard at home from our parents, our grandparents, our friends, our neighbours in the locality, and maybe try and record those and develop our own repository here in Milltown of our own folklore and our own history.
Yeah, because that's something that's very close to your own heart, Liam.
It is. I just love oral history. I grew up in a home where my father loved telling stories from his youth. And my mother's from Achan Island, and she had a hugely diverse range of stories from Achan Island. And even to this day, when my own kids come down to Kerry, our nieces or nephews, they all sit around and they listen to Granny and Grandad tell them a few stories. And I think it's so important because it's transient. You know, we have this opportunity at the moment to collect these stories. But when these people pass on, their stories pass on with them. So it's hugely important that we actually listen to these people and try and capture them. Because when these people pass on, the stories go with them.
Yeah.
And unlike other forms of history where it's documented or recorded, or archaeologists can find these, you know, these treasures under the ground, oral history is different. It's gone. So it's so important that we take action now and capture that folklore that's in all of our localities.
Yeah, it's well said, because, you know, people think, oh, history is there forever, but the oral history is not. And there's kind of, it's an urgency, to be honest, to kind of capture it before it's gone. Liam and Owen, stay with me, because we'll talk more about this weekend. And Liam, I know you are a native Milltown, but you're in Kells in Kilkenny, and you're involved in a few kind of an heritage initiatives there too as well. So I'd like to talk to you about that. But we'll take a break with more after these.
The Saturday Supplement on Radio Kerry. Brought to you by Quinlan's Fish Shop and Seafood Bar, the Mall Tralee. Treat yourself to the freshest takeaway fish and chips today, right in the heart of Tralee.
Yeah, we're talking about the inaugural Milltown History and Heritage Weekend taking place this weekend. We're very lucky in this county to have some fantastic events taking place coinciding with Heritage Week. On the line, we have members of Milltown History and Heritage Society, Owen O'Shea and Liam O'Sullivan. And Liam, I mentioned you're a native of Milltown, but you're a resident in Kells in County Kilkenny, and you're involved in a few initiatives there as well in relation to heritage and history. And one that I'm very enthused about talking to you is the reenactment of the Talton Games. Tell us about the Talton Games for people that wouldn't know their history.
Yeah, so the Talton Games were Europe's biggest sporting festival, and really from, you know, 2000 years BC until just prior to the Norman Conquest, really, these were massive sport, festival of sports, music, culture, storytelling, you name it. And it happened up in Meath in County Kilkenny. The Free State government made an attempt to bring it back in 24, 28 and 32, but it wasn't successful. It didn't stay with us, but when it was reimagined, I suppose, it was bigger than the Olympics. So it was a massive celebration, really, of our Irish culture. And I kind of came across it by accident. I came across this listing stone in the small rural village where I live in rural Kilkenny. And I contacted some people who are rejuvenating the Irish sport of stone lifting. And one Sunday afternoon, these 12 or 15 guys came into the village from every corner of Ireland to lift the stone. And the stone lifting just really caught my imagination. They're so passionate about this little nugget of Irish sporting history that's kind of been forgotten.
Yeah.
And I stayed in touch with them, and they kind of said to me, look, you know, we don't really have any forum to, you know, to show off our sport. And I was aware of the Charlton Games, and I said, why not have another go at the Charlton Games? Why not bring, you know, shine a light to these little nuggets of Irish history that Ireland really has forgotten? So on the 20th of September, we're reconnecting Ireland with these ancient Irish sports, so stuff like wild hurling, which is very different than hurling as we know it now.
And hurling is wild enough without it getting any wilder.
It's wild, but it's going to get even wilder in Kilkenny on the 20th of September. So stone lifting, stick fighting, rounders is another sport that has, you know, its roots in ancient Ireland.
Yeah.
So we're going to bring all these sports back to life. We're looking to have a medieval priory, also an Augustinian priory in Kells. So we have a big amphitheatre there. We're going to display all these sports, give people a chance to participate in them as well. And then we're going to round the evening off with some feasting, and then we're going to have some music. So, yeah, it's getting a huge amount of attention. There seems to be a need for the Irish people at the moment. There's a cultural revival happening, and there's a demand out there for people to really connect with their Irish culture and not just read about it or hear about it, but to feel it and experience and be part of it. So,
yeah.
Really looking forward to that.
Excellent. And that is what this inaugural Milltown History and Heritage Weekend is all about, Owen. So how do people, if they want to kind of go to Eddie Lennon tonight, or if they want to attend anything else, how do they get more information? How do they go about it?
Yeah, absolutely. All welcome. There's bookings on our website, which is miltownhistoryheritage.ie. But if anybody would like to turn up tonight at the community hall, that's the old Minturn Estera Hall at 8 o'clock. We'll certainly fit you in. And that promises to be a gorgeous evening with Eddie Lennon. It's suitable actually for all ages. Eddie's material is very suitable for younger ears and as well. So, you know, it's suitable for all of the family. Tomorrow, then, the walk with Dr. John Knightley starts at 12 noon from the community hall as well. And even if you haven't booked in advance via the website, we'll certainly accommodate you. And again, just tapping into what Liam said, it just highlights that interest, I think, renewed interest in local history and local stories and the history of the space and the world around us, which maybe is being lost a little bit in today's world, but hoping to reconnect people with the past and enjoy the stories of the locality over the next couple of days.
Yeah. Liam, I mentioned you're in Kilkenny now, but obviously Milltown still calls to you, and it's important for you to kind of be involved in organisations like Milltown History and Heritage Society.
Yeah, absolutely. And we're absolutely blessed in Milltown to have really good historians like Owen and John as part of the team there. So they have a huge wealth of knowledge. But I suppose growing up in somewhere like Milltown and, you know, rambling around the White Church and the Abbey growing up, you know, it does leave an impact, you know, and it's always been with me. And I'm probably gone longer than I was ever in Milltown. But, I just love the place. I love the history. And particularly in Milltown at the moment, you know, it's a very fast-growing town. And there's a huge amount of new people coming into the town that probably aren't aware of their history and the heritage that is literally all around them, that's on their doorstep. So it's a huge opportunity for those new people in Milltown to connect with their locality and connect with their new neighbours and understand the history of the area in which they're living. So, yeah, it's a great opportunity to be able to really shed some light on the fantastic history that's here on our doorstep.
Excellent. Well, you've two great spokespersons there in Owen O'Shea and Liam O'Sullivan for the Milltown History and Heritage Society. And for more information on the weekend, milltownhistoryheritage.ie, and for all the wonderful initiatives they're involved in. But for now, Liam and Owen, thanks a million, and best of luck with the rest of the weekend.
Thank you, Joe.
Good job.
Yeah, and that is taking place, like I said, this weekend. And make sure to support it, because this is important to support events like this. And next Saturday on the Saturday Supplement, before I forget it, it is Frank, the first Saturday, or the last Saturday of every month. And on his programme, support for 31 years of Sister Mary Lucy's work in Zambia. Received Zambian President Special Award on Radio Kerry August 30th. Building three villages, bringing two 40-foot containers filled with second-hand bicycles and sewing machines, feeding the hungry, building schools, were all part of the work of Sister Mary Lucy's years in Zambia. In May, the Zambian president presented Mary with the country's highest honour, the president's insignia of mercy. The story of Sister Mary's 31 years in Zambia will be told on Radio Kerry on Saturday, August 30th from 9 to 11am. We're going to take a break, and after that we're going to be talking about the Daniel O'Connell Summer School.
The Saturday Supplement on Radio Kerry. Brought to you by Quinlan's The Mad Monk in Killarney. Serving the finest seafood in a cosy, modern atmosphere. Book your special experience today at seafoodbar.ie.
That's what you're listening to, and I hope you're enjoying the programme so far. The Daniel O'Connell Summer School, or the Daniel O'Connell School, will be held over the weekend of Friday and Saturday next weekend, 29th to the 30th of August, and will mark the 250th anniversary of the birth of Daniel O'Connell. And I'm delighted to say, in studio, Murch Brick, Professor Emeritus of History at UCD, is here with us. He is a member and former Vice President of the Royal Irish Academy, and has been Director of the Daniel O'Connell Summer School since it was re-established in 2013. Marsh, you're very welcome. How are you this morning?
Thanks, Joe. Very good. Very well. Thank you for inviting me.
A very busy year this year because of the year that was in it, the 250th anniversary of the birth of Daniel O'Connell. And that was marked in South Kerry just recently. Tell us about that and how it went.
Yeah, well, there was a separate committee established, let's say, towards the beginning of the year, where we brought all the various parties in the town together, in the GA, the parish, the shopkeepers. All these people came together under a committee that was chaired by Dermot Walsh, and we looked at how we might mark it, you know. And so each one was given an assignment. The GA had its assignment, the shopkeepers had their assignment, the school had its assignment, and it really worked very well, because it meant that as you move from one meeting to the next, you were actually moving along three or four different lines at the same time.
Excellent.
And eventually it was all brought together, and it worked very, very well, I must say. It was a great atmosphere in the town during that week. And also, of course, we had a state commemoration as well, which was part of it. And that worked very well as well. The state commemoration in Derry Nan with the civic reception in Carsevine, both kind of were fit of it, as they say in Irish. And they were very, very interconnected. And that worked very, very well and created a great atmosphere in the town, I must say. It's still there, actually. Yeah. I was down there the other day, and you can still feel it, the residue of it. You know,
yeah, and the significance, I suppose, of Carsevine and Derry Nan, the birthplace of Daniel O'Connell in Carsevine, and the churches there, yeah, and then the residents in Derry Nan.
Yeah, well, as they say, you know, it was important to us, even in the O'Connell School, which is separate from what we did a few weeks ago, a separate organisation, but it was very important to keep both sides of the hill together, you know, the other side of the hill, this side of the hill, and both really worked very well together. That's why we have divide the O'Connell School between Carsevine one day and Derry Nan on the other hand. You know, they have the two kind of, or both sides of the hill represent two different phases in O'Connell's life. As you say, he was born in Carsevine, and it was not until 1825, when he was 50 years of age, that he inherited Derry Nan, you know. So he spent a considerable amount of his time in and around Cairn. And of course, the fact that he married Mary, who came without a dowry, didn't go down well with with his uncle, and so therefore he disinherited O'Connell for a while. So he spent even a lot of time in Cairn before moving eventually to Derry Nan. So as I said, there are these two aspects of his life, you know, the Cairn episode and the Derry Nan episode, and we try and kind of integrate both insofar as we possibly can. You know, we don't want to separate them. They're part and parcel of the same life, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
And I mean, I must say, one of the highlights for me of the last week was having a mass in the penal church in the middle of Carsevine. And even when I was growing up, I was totally unaware of the fact that there was this penal church right in the middle of the town there near the car park. Mm. And it's great that thanks to the efforts of Geoffrey O'Connor there, the chemist, who's now dead, but when he was alive, he made it his life's work, I would say, to try and make sure that that was conserved, and he's done a fantastic job. It's conserved now. We had a mass there a few years ago. The bishop came to celebrate mass this year in honour of the 250th anniversary, and again it was fantastic. And then we moved across the way then to the old Abbey graveyard, and then had a number of events there. So again, everything really worked very, very well together, and it was great to see the committee kind of drawing on different aspects of the history and society and culture of South Kerry.
Yeah, and that graveyard is significant to the O'Connells as well.
It is.
Yeah.
Well, Daniel O'Connell's father is buried there, not his mother. His mother was from Cork, and actually she was buried there, which I think was actually not unusual at the time, that husbands and wives were sometimes buried, not buried together. I mean, O'Connell's own wife, as you know, is buried in Derrynane, but he's buried in Glasnevin, so it was not unusual.
Yeah.
That husbands and wives are buried with their own people, so to speak, you know. But so the father is buried there, and it's a fantastic space, and the local development association have all kinds of plans to develop it as a resource for the town, you know, and it looked absolutely splendid that day, you know.
Yeah, it's a beautiful piece.
It's wonderful. Yeah.
Yeah, right where it is. I remember I attended a great historical talk by the late Junie Murphy there.
Oh, yes, of course.
And it was it's brilliant to be actually in the place when you're talking about that kind of history. Yes. I don't know, it brings it all to life so much more. The school then, it was re-established in 2013. Tell us about that.
The school originated, I suppose, in the 1980s when Morris O'Connell, who was one of O'Connell's great-great-grandson, he and Tom Barrington and a few others who were interested in the history of South Kerry established an O'Connell summer school in Derrynane itself, and that lasted, I'd say, for about 10 years. And then as part of, I don't know if you remember, The Gathering, which was an initiative that Fáilte Ireland brought in.
Yeah, we organised the festival for it in 2013, that was, yeah.
It was around that time. And the O'Connell School sort of came out of that, you know, that's how it grew. Again, you mentioned Junie Murphy there. He was the person who was really, I would say, at the heart of it, himself and Mary O'Connor, to try and develop The Gathering, or sorry, to try and develop the school as an aspect of The Gathering, you know. And again, it worked very well. Now, it has grown over the years. I mean, we there's this kind of idea, if you mentioned Daniel O'Connell Summer School, that we deal only with Daniel O'Connell. In fact, it is a much wider remit than that, and over the years we've looked at all kinds of things about local development in Kerry, you know, celebration of O'Connell's ideals, but all different kinds of things. It's not just focusing on, we're not the keepers of the flame, in other words, you know, that we try and make it as broadly based and as broad an appeal as possible, and no long academic lectures either. We tell our speakers, you know, I'm sure you're very interesting, but 20 minutes will do, thank you very much.
Really,
and people appreciate that as well, you know.
Quality, not quantity.
Well, quality, exactly. And also, well, it's the sociability as well. It gives people an opportunity to meet with one another outside of the lecture hall, so to speak, and to engage with one another. And I know people enjoy it for that reason. There's a lot of feedback we get back. It mentions that, the idea that you can meet so many people and can make friends. And I know friendships have been made there, and the same people come back year in, year out, you know?
Yeah. So, I know we'll be talking about the highlights of this school, but over the last, those last 10 years, more than 10 years now, 12 years, what have been the things that have stood out to you?
Well, I would say I would say, first of all, the visit of Seamus Mallon, you know. Mm. He came in, let me think, maybe about 2019, 2020, that kind of period. And in honour of his visit, actually, we inaugurated the Daniel O'Connell Award, which was to recognise somebody who reflected the ideals of O'Connell in their life and in their career. And Seamus came, and he came for 2 days. He ended up spending a week, you know. He was the most inspirational guest to listen to him and to engage with what for many people is history, but for so many others is a kind of a period in our history that people lived through, and how important people like Seamus Mallon and John Hume were in to that whole peace process. So that was a very inspirational kind of a visit, I think, for me. The other thing, I suppose, is that we also try and in 2016, for example, in relation to the commemoration of the 1916 rebellion, we had a special session on that, you know. So we had people like Tim Lynch, who was the grandson of Finan Lynch. Mm-hmm. We had Bridget Laffan, who was her grandfather was involved as well in the fight for independence. So we did, that was again a very special thing, because it gave a sense of reality to it, to that whole thing. Finan Lynch's uncle, Dermot Walsh, who was the son of Finan Lynch, was actually there. He arrived from London, where he lived, took a plane to Cork, hired a car, came down, gave his lecture, gave his interview, stayed for a half an hour and disappeared again. And in all of his 91 years, I was like, where is Dermot gone? Suddenly he was gone. And he came back to us again about 2 years ago, in age 94, runs 5 miles a day. I mean, extraordinary man, you know. But he was, again, of that generation, you know. He was, again, that kind of session to me was actually, because it brings a kind of, Owen O'Shea there and Liam O'Sullivan were mentioning this in your previous segment, talking about people reconnecting with the past, that the past is not something that's far away. It kind of has shaped us in a very real way. And to listen to people like that who lived and were related to these people, like Fionn Onan. It gives you kind of a sense of kind of immediacy. You know,
and it maintains relevance. That gathering element as well, that it kind
it
of
does,
started.
It does. As I say, that is very important to us. We don't kind of, we're not like the McGill Summer School or the Kennedy Summer School, all of which are very fine organisations. I've attended both, but it's not like that. You know, it's very much a kind of a light touch, sociable event, and we like to kind of develop the programme with that in mind, really. You know?
Yeah, but they're heavy hitters over the years when you mentioned the likes
There have been, but again, the important thing is we can listen to them in a more informal way. You know, we don't expect, as I said, the 90-minute lecture or the 60-minute lecture or whatever, you know, that we can listen to them, give short snippets and be interviewed. I remember Micheál Martin, actually, who's one of our guests this year, but I remember when he came originally in, I think it was about 2019 or thereabouts as well, and he was interviewed by Olivia O'Leary. And it was the most interesting interview because there was no template for it, you know. I remember, like, discussing with his people, well, what's the nature of the interview going to be? And it could be anything. And it turned out to be anything. But it was most interesting because it was spontaneous. It was informal. And the kind of, the situation lent itself to that, you know what I mean? Yeah. If you were in an academic setting now, that would be far more careful and maybe even pompous, you know, pompously put. But there was a great deal of informality surrounding the event. And you get more out of your, you know this, I presume, from your own life. You get more out of people by putting them at ease and by making them informal rather than kind of doing it through the script, you know.
Yeah, completely. And what draws the speakers to the festival, do you think? Like, is it the Daniel O'Connell, the name, and being in his homestead or being in his place?
Well, I think it's partly that, and it's partly reputation, because funnily enough, the school has changed over the years. One of the things that has remained constant is the fact that it's known to be an informal, sociable place. And people come to South Kerry, they have their holidays in South Kerry, they might come for 2 days and spend three or four. We find people coming back now again and again. And I know this year, quite a few people I know who are bringing friends with them for the first time on the basis that they will enjoy it. Rest assured, you will enjoy it. And so they come and they find out they do enjoy it. So there's the reputation side of it. There is, of course, what South Kerry can offer. As you know, best place in the world, Joe. Very enjoyable. People are friendly and all that kind of thing. And so there's that side of it. And as I say again, it's a part holiday kind of thing, you know.
And for history.
And in all the time I've been involved in this, we've only had one refusal, and that was for personal reasons, as I discovered subsequently. We've never, ever, ever, ever had anybody say no. You know, probably you have to give them notice, of course.
But that's a great record. But it's a great place for history as well, isn't it?
But again, as Liam said there, you know, Liam O'Sullivan, we were talking about Milton, it gives people an opportunity to reconnect. I mean, I started writing a book in South Kerry there about 3 or 4 years ago. I don't know if I'll ever see the end of it.
Still waiting for you to give me the call and the finish of it.
But the thing about it is that what fascinated me about that exercise is not only do we have a very rich history in Kerry, in South Kerry, indeed. But what the school does, it gives us an opportunity to reconnect with it. I mean, I remember, like, even when I was growing up, going over to Cuscron, where I used to go swimming when I was growing up, and you'd pass by Bennycarbery Castle, and I often wonder, what was Bennycarbery Castle all about? It turned out, when I started to do research for this book, Bennycarbery Castle was probably one of the most important influential places in southwest Munster, you know, and it had its own story, and it's part of the O'Connell story, in a way. But so we have that history, and as I said, schools give you, or the summer school gives us a chance to reconnect with that history and to sort of re-engage with it, you know.
Bring it to life a bit as well.
In an informal, light touch way, as I say.
You know? Well, we will talk about the exciting programme you have lined up next weekend, but we'll go to break and we'll have more from Moorish Brick after these.
The Saturday Supplement on Radio Kerry. Brought to you by Quinlan's Fish Shops and Seafood Bars located across the county. Serving the freshest seafood to Kerry families since 1963.
Yes, indeed. And we're talking about the Daniel O'Connell Summer School. It's held Friday, Saturday, next weekend, 29th to the 30th. And the programme for the first day will be held in Carsaveen at the Ring of Kerry Hotel. And the second day will be spent in Derrynane House, Cahir Daniel. And I'm delighted to say, director, we have Professor Moorish Brick, the director of the O'Connell School. And Moorish, you know, we were talking about the last few years since it was re-established in 2013. And you were mentioning Seamus Malone 2019 coming into 2020. And I was thinking then, as you were saying it, how did you manage with the pandemic? Was it a remote kind of a school, or how did it work?
Yeah, we did it remotely. Actually, we were wondering how to deal with that, because now the Mary O'Connor and myself would be known for, like, maybe I shouldn't be speaking for Mary. You should never be speaking on behalf of your chairperson. But certainly in my case, I'm not known for my expertise with technology. But one of the things about it, was that we developed the virtual school much more. And that was actually quite important, because people now, if they can't come to be there in person, they are invited to watch it in, you know, virtually,
yeah,
through the website. And that actually has had a very curious result, again, something that we didn't anticipate. But again, that reflects my lack of knowledge about these things, maybe more than anything else. But we were able to bring people in from the Irish diaspora. Like, we have three or four people in New Zealand, for example, who chime in every year, you know, and it's always a great occasion for me to acknowledge them when I'm introducing the school. And it gives us an opportunity to re-engage with organisations in America, with, you know, the Frederick Douglass Society. We've had them here in the past as well. We had them visit us in the past. You know, the Kerrymans Association. That's actually something that I'd like to see maybe developing into the future, you know, the Kerrymans Association in New York and London, places like that. There's the thing about doing virtual events, as you well know, is it gives an opportunity to widen your audience and, yeah, to touch base with people.
And you've a global name in Daniel O'Connell as well.
We have a global name, you see. And then, you see, that in turn might lead them to come and to visit in person. Mm. You know, so one thing leads to a next. So just because you can't come in person means that you can't engage with it or can't learn from it. But it gives people access, and hopefully that will lead into their fit. In case the Frederick Douglass Society, for example, they had been engaging with us for about 2 or 3 years, and then they came to visit us, I think, about 2 or 3 years ago, some people from the society. And that was, again, the kind of thing we'd like to see more. Because, again, you know, the Irish diaspora, not just in relation to O'Connell, but the wider Irish diaspora, is a very important part of the story of South Kerry, which is really not, I think, given enough attention. It's something I'd like to pursue maybe next year. I mean, when you think of the Murphys growing up, I was in the Murphys, the great contractors in London, you know, Denny Tim. There are a lot of people like that around the place who really were crucial in developing England, really, after the Second World War, but gave all kinds of employment opportunities for people like South Kerry. And it's the kind of a thing I'd like to explore a little bit more. Mm. So again, to come back to what I said at the beginning, it's not just about Daniel O'Connell and his legacy. It's really about the wider historical culture. And we're using the O'Connell as a kind of a brand name, for want of a better word, to attach to it.
Exactly. Yeah. I look across at Murphy's Homestead every day.
I'm sure you do. Yeah. I remember them.
My good friend Fiona Brennan, a theatre historian, she's often on this programme, and she's playing her part in the school. Tell us about that.
But that's another example, again, of how the nature of the school has developed over the last 10 years, you know. I met Fiona, I think, for the first time about 3 or 4 years ago. And what she does is she lectures on people from the locality who have written plays and poetry and all that sort of thing. And also, by default, then, is really very much at the centre of re-energising the amateur drama movement in South Kerry. And that's having a real impact. And that's, again, another example of how the school can interact with wider movements like them. But the two, again, that the two can kind of synergise the one with the other, you know. And this year, Fiona is, again, talking to our school. She's spoken, I think, once, if not twice before. She's one of those people that we've had back on a number of occasions, but make no apology for it, because she's extraordinarily interesting, and she's extraordinarily interesting material, a lot of which has been ignored over the years, and she's bringing it to life and bringing the amateur drama movement to life with it. You know, she was part of the commemorations we had in Carsevine there about 2 weeks ago, gave a wonderful presentation drawing on the amateur drama movement in Killoglan in this case, and giving reading extracts by and about people from the locality, such as Sigerson Clifford and Pauline Maguire, people like that, who've written about the area in their own way and in their own language. And we're now presenting it to their own people, if you like, in South Kerry.
You know? Yeah. Do you know what, as we're talking along here, what's striking me is, you know, you might think kind of a narrow perspective when you're listening, when you're hearing, oh, the Daniel O'Connell Summer School, that it's like history lectures on Daniel O'Connell, which are important. Mm. But there's so much more to this. And it seems like you're trying to create a bit of a legacy as well going forward. You're looking to the future as well as looking to the past.
Yeah, well, it is. Any good school or any organisation of this sort, and again, you find that in Milltown as well, you know, it has that kind of dynamic of its own. I mean, they went and did this fantastic film, as you mentioned there in the last segment. You know, it's not just a narrow focus. You have to have a broad kind of sweep and a broad kind of focus. And some things work, some things don't work. But if you don't have the broad sweep, you know, it'll be very limited in the way it can develop. You know, so it's important to have the broad sweep from the beginning. Mm. And we certainly have. And then we find new things. As I said, look what happened, as I said, during the COVID thing, when we developed the virtue. That was not something we ever thought about.
Yeah.
Junie Murphy wasn't known for his technological expertise either. So there were two of us in it, three of us in it.
Yeah.
But look what happened, you know. And this year, I mean, the even though the tickets are, most of them are gone by now, but what we're encouraging people to do is to look at the virtual registration, and by looking at the virtual registration, to get a taste of what the school is, and maybe they might book earlier next year and come in person, you know.
Yeah, excellent. Well, give us a few more highlights in the time we've left. You can't get to everything. There's so much happening on the weekend itself.
Well, I suppose if I was to pick out anything in this year's programme, it would be the lecture again, the presentation that's been made by Aaron Bishop on Mary O'Connell, because again, a number of commentators have pointed to the fact that I know it's O'Connell's birthday and his 250th anniversary, that sort of thing, but there was two of them in it, you know.
Daniel's wife,
There's Daniel and Mary in it, and she was actually quite an influential figure in O'Connell's life. And I'm very fortunate that a lady called Aaron Bishop, who was a former student of mine, as it happens, but who now advises towns and cities in America about their cultural heritage. That's what she does. Yeah. She's not a kind
How many former students have you had that have got on to... she was a student of yours, wasn't
he? He was indeed, and a very good one too. And John Knightley, but very, very good students of her too. But she, as part of her PhD, did an analysis of Mary O'Connell, and based on the letters that O'Connell and she exchanged. And again, she went into, as a public service, I suppose you could call it, as an advisor to cities, you know, celebrating anniversaries and cultural and all that kind of, those sort of things. And she kind of left that work to one side. She subsequently published two volumes on Mary O'Connell's letters and on Mary O'Connell's lifetime, which again, I think, was sort of left to one side, I think. I'm very glad that she's coming and will give that a new outing, and that people will, through her work and through her presentation, will get a better appreciation of Mary O'Connell and where she fits into the wider world of Daniel O'Connell, because she certainly was part of that. They weren't just husband and wife, they were a team, and that's quite clear when you look at some of their letters. I was looking through some of them there the other day, and they're actually quite substantive. They're not just, husband and wife exchanging pleasantries about children and all that sort of thing, but they're much more than that. They talk about problems of the country, how perhaps the problems of the country should be dealt with. She certainly has opinions, and she doesn't hold back, you know, so, and he kind of comments on them. So there, as I said, there were two of the minute, and we're glad to kind of address that point in our school this year. So I'm very pleased that Aaron is doing that, and I think it'll be a lecture worthwhile listening to.
Yeah, and you will be presenting the award as well.
Well, we don't publish it. We don't present it every year, but this year we will be giving it to Donny O'Sullivan. You know, the obviously it's a contemporary of yours.
Well, he would have been in the same school. Yeah, he's a few years younger than me now. Yeah.
But we're very proud of Donny, again, former student of mine, I should say, he's a great guy, I must say, and it's important, I think, to recognise people like that at the beginning of their career as at the end of their career, you know, like in Seamus Mallon. But he's a great guy, I must say, Donny is, and he said, and of course, he recently got the Emmy Award, and the Emmy Award is really a very, very prestigious recognition of the worth of his work and his journalism at such an early age, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So certainly that's going to be a big event too. And again, honouring our own, you know, it's important to kind of recognise people like this as well.
Excellent. We're nearly out of time, but if people want more information, where do they go and how can they, you said the tickets are nearly sold out for most things.
They are pretty much gone really, but if people want to kind of go on the website and leave messages, certainly the tickets for Diana and the second day are gone, because of course the space is very limited there. In Carstairs we have a bit more flexibility, but if, as I said, I think the tickets are gone there too. But they can at least put their names on the website. But please be tolerant with us. You know, we can't. Everybody's looking for tickets, but there's only so many we can distribute. We will try our very best to accommodate people, but just to be aware, book earlier next year.
Yeah, excellent. The Daniel O'Connell Summer School, if you Google Daniel O'Connell Summer School, it comes up straight away. So make sure to do that as well. But the website is danieloconnellsummerschool.com. And you must pre-register there as well. So, Maurice, best of luck with it. You've had a busy summer, and it's not over yet, and I know with all these things, I can imagine when it's finished next weekend, it nearly starts for the following year again.
It does, you know, you're as good as your last gig, you know.
Boris, thanks a million for coming in, and best of luck with the school this year. Lots more to come on the programme in the next hour. We will be having a very special series. Radio Kerry's Youth Voices series is giving young people around Kerry the chance to explore all the different resources and opportunities for them around the county. It's a joint collaboration between Radio Kerry, ETB, Tusla, Jigsaw and KCYS. And this morning we're looking at all all the resources on offer for young migrants and young members of the LGBT plus community in Kerry. That's all to come in the next hour, but we'll take a break, we'll have the news, and I'll join you again after that.
The Saturday Supplement on Radio Kerry. Brought to you by the new family fish box at Quinlan's Seafood Bars. Packed with golden fish goujons, fresh squid, delicious prawns and tasty homemade chips. Order yours to take away today.
The Saturday Supplement with Joe McGill on Radio Kerry.
Now we're into the second hour of the Saturday Supplement. I hope you're enjoying the programme so far. Radio Kerry's Youth Voice series is giving young people around Kerry the chance to explore all the different resources and opportunities for them around the county. It's a joint collaboration between Radio Kerry, Kerry ETB, Tusla, Jigsaw and KCYS. Today, this morning, we're looking at all the resources on offer for young migrants and young members of the LGBT plus community in Kerry. We're treated to a special double feature this morning, thanks to the work of some very talented young people who have spent 3 days in Radio Kerry this week putting together two very informative shows. Now, the two episodes were produced by members of the Youth Voice Group, Nell Moore-Ryan, Christian Glazier, Joseph Gazzito and Brendan Locke Fitzgerald. And a special thanks to Daniel Quirk, who is over Kingdom Pride and Scene in Kerry, and comedian and podcast producer Sinead Walsh for their contributions to the LGBT plus episode. Also, a very special thank you to the members of the Tralee International Resource Centre and NEWKD for all their assistance in sourcing such a diverse group of young migrants to interview. Now, the Youth Voice series is brought to you by Radio Kerry and funded by Commission Na Mban with the television licence fee. And links to previous Youth Voice series programmes are available on the podcast section of the Radio Kerry website. And these episodes were produced by Siobhan Brosnan as well, we should say that. Now sit back, relax and enjoy these.
The Youth Voice series is brought to you by Radio Kerry and funded by Commission Na Mban with the television licence fee.
On this episode of the Youth Voice series, we're looking at the experience of young migrants in the county as well as the resources available to them. Anna is a young Ukrainian woman living in Kerry. Here's her experience.
Okay, so my name is Anna Yushenko, and originally I'm from Ukraine, and I moved to Kerry already 2 years ago. Yeah. So.
And could you tell me what was the most challenging thing about moving from Ukraine to Kerry?
So, technically, firstly, I moved to generally Ireland, to Dublin, and then they sent me to County Clare. I was living in Shannon, but I lived there in a hotel, and there were like tourists coming and government who provides us accommodation. They moved us to Killarney and after it to Tralee. So it was a long journey, and in the end I got here to Kerry. Yeah, but the main reason why I moved to Ireland, to County Clare and then to County Kerry, it's because of the war, unfortunately.
Yes, unfortunately. Did you prefer Dublin or Kerry, just out of curiosity?
I like Kerry because County Kerry is very beautiful. I spent here already 2 years. I found lots of friends. I'm working here. I studied here. So, yeah, I like County Kerry.
What would you say is the biggest difference between Ukraine and Kerry now?
It's completely different. And, like, I was born in Kyiv, so it's capital city. It's like, you know, it's a big city. It's bigger than Dublin. So I use for traffic, big houses, apartments. Of course, and County Kerry, it's completely a different story. It has very beautiful nature, mountains. So if you're a countryside person and you would like to enjoy the views, County Kerry is definitely for you. You can go hiking, you can do explore. But if you're a city girl, it's a bit challenging because it's kind of small towns, but they have its own vibe. So it's kind of, this is the main thing, what's different, population and traffics and all that stuff.
What are some of the challenges you faced living in Kerry, if any?
So when I moved to Kerry, like, of course, I was thinking, like, what to do, to find a work or to study. So I decided to study first, and, like, I didn't have, like, lots of challenges, Ukrainians and organizations, they helped me. So I studied in Kerry College and it was very joyful, very nice. Thankfully, I like my English level is a good one, so I can kind of get through interviews and all this stuff. Challenges, let me think. Maybe to find work, it was a bit challenging. Like I spent some time to find it, and thanks God, Irish people, like connections, you know, they helped me to find it. So far, everything is good. We'll see how it will be in future.
And what would you say has helped you be welcomed in the community by people?
Here, New KD, if you know what I'm talking, so New KD, there are also like Irish and Ukrainians and British people with whom I chatted, and they organized meetings, like volunteer meetings, where we were told how to find work or how to start your own business. So Olga Marinsova, thanks to them, they organized events and they were helping us. Also in Turk, there are also like Ukrainians who are working there, and they also always open and Irish people who are open and glad to help you how to find work or any questions which could happen, like medical. So this kind of two organizations, Citizen Information Office, so kind of if I had questions, I could come there and they will help me. Yeah, and just generally, like I managed to get friends here, like local friends, who also kind of run businesses and all the stuff, so they also help me and support.
And if I could ask, if you could talk to any young migrant in Kerry, what would you say to them?
I would say just enjoy it, because County Kerry is very beautiful. I could suggest them to join choirs. That's what I did. And I know some immigrants who moved to Kerry. We joined an international choir. There were lots of people who moved to Kerry. And we kind of were singing, but we also get in touch with each other. So maybe to find something what you can do, like to find a hobby, so you can chat to people. If you need help, always talk. New KD can help you. It's a great county. There are great people here, and step by step you can reach what you want.
We spoke to the people of Tralee to see if the Irish welcome extends to migrants.
Unfortunately, even if it might be a minority, I think there are those who are perhaps rather narrow-minded and I would think fearful. And sometimes that fear might be expressed in anger. I am from Dublin. I live in Tralee and very happily. And I would have to say that even as a Dubliner, I have met with an attitude that says, you're not from here. Why are you taking this opportunity? Could it not be one of our own? We're all one of our own. We are all God's children.
I would say so. It's in general, yes, but obviously there will always be issues. But in general, I think people are welcoming, and you know that's the nature of Kerry people.
I do. I think it's a great county. I think we're very welcoming. Yeah, I do.
Thank you. As I am from outside the country, I'd say yes, because I felt very welcome here.
I do think there are definitely other counties that are less welcoming, because you always hear stuff going on, like say in Dublin or like Limerick or like those types of places. You hear all stories about the immigrants and stuff being like treated badly, some being attacked, but you don't really hear a lot about that in Kerry. So yeah,
for sure. Yeah, over last while they've got a bit of a bad name, but I think in recent times they've been improving, and I think they've got a good name now. I think they're a good community.
I'd say so, yeah. I mean, there is a bit of hostility in other parts of the country, but I found here in Kerry migrants are just welcomed as just people, just who they are, really.
I do think Kerry is a welcoming county for young migrants, as I do think that there is worse counties and worse places in the world. But again, like, there is much more steps we can take to just be better towards everyone in the community ourselves.
Victoria is a support worker with the Tralee International Resource Centre.
I'm working more than 3 years after I arrived to Ireland because of war in Ukraine. I'm working with Turk. My title is I'm support worker with Ukrainians, different age group. So we cover all issues. We are trying to support Ukrainians in different ways, starting from application for social protection payments, finding job places at schools, medical issues, a lot of medical issues Ukrainians have, mental health issues, access to different services, searching for houses, etc., etc.
What are some of the biggest challenges that young migrants face in Kerry?
I think the big challenge, the biggest challenge, it's mental challenge, because when adults come into different country, they accept this, they are ready for that. But children and teenagers, they were separated, mostly separated from their families, from fathers. They came to other country with other language. So those children and teenagers start to learn English. They are involved in different activities, school activities, and education in Ireland, much different than education scheme in Ukraine. I think that's the biggest issue. They are building communications to the same age very easily, same truth. But sometimes it might be some even bullying. They're facing with the bullying from locals. Sometimes it happens, indeed.
What helps young people who are migrants feel welcomed in their community?
Behave, good behavior, smiles, you know, involving in some activities. That's very important for children and teenagers to be involved in some activities. And many centers are trying to do so. For example, now we have English for teenagers through art classes. Different activities might be very helpful.
Oh, that's nice. How does TRC support young people to get involved in Irish society and life?
Actually, it's a hard question. Not too much activities might be done with teenagers and children, because children should be the person who leading those activities might have permission, you know. Might have permission from Gardaí to work with children. So in Tralee we have KCYS, this great organization that also provides some activities for children and teenagers on Saturdays.
Yeah, I'm also part of KCYS too.
Oh, that's great. That's great, Joseph. That's great. Every activities that we are making, they are very successful, because amount of parents who contacted our center for those activities are very grateful, and they are ready to come back again. Because before this activities through art, before this English through art, we had an English speaking club for teenagers as well. It was very popular in our community.
The Saturday Supplement with Joe McGill on Radio Kerry.
The Youth Voice series is brought to you by Radio Kerry and funded by Commissioned Man with a television licence fee.
I also told my own story of moving to Kerry.
I'm 15.
So, Joseph, would you like to tell me where you were born?
I was born in Haiti.
Oh, yeah. How old were you when you first moved?
Like one.
One. And where did you move to then?
United States.
All right. And how long were you there in the States for?
9 years. I stayed in the Caribbean for like 6 months, and then I moved to Malta.
And then Kerry after that?
Yeah.
Yeah. Coming into Kerry, did you find the hospitality any different to maybe Malta and, I guess...
No, not really.
So was everybody... Did you find everybody welcoming?
Yes.
Yeah. What would you say would be the most challenging part for you from moving from countries?
Probably the culture and the friends too.
Were you homeschooled, or were you moved from between different schools, say, around from the US?
I was in regular school in Malta, but then I was homeschooled here.
All right. And how does that work then?
It's pretty good. I have more freedom.
What are some of the services you have used for support and carry that other young migrants could take advantage of?
Probably the Tralee Resource Centre.
Yeah.
We used a few times, but
and
that was about it.
Would you say you found the KCYS any useful? Yeah.
They were helpful as well, integrating into the community.
Yeah. Being a part of Corlin and all is another that all helps you settle in.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So.
And I worked with NYCI National Youth Assembly of Ireland and KCYS. Music Generation. I was in Music Generation and I did clarinet lessons as well.
What has been your favourite thing since moving to Kerry about Kerry?
Probably the people. The people are very kind.
What do you think Kerry people can do to support people moving to Kerry and moving to Ireland to make you feel welcome and at home?
That's a hard question.
I know, sorry. What would you have wanted when you first moved?
Probably better housing. Yeah, that's about it. Just better housing.
But the people have been welcoming and...
Yeah, the people have been welcoming.
Great.
Luis from Brazil and Igon from Lithuania speak about their experience of moving to Kerry, where they have been living for the last year.
I'm Luis, I'm 15. I'm come to Kerry 1 year ago, February, I think. I don't know, I remember. It's kind of like 1 year and a half. But yeah.
From Brazil.
From Brazil, yeah.
I come to Kerry around 1.5 years ago, and from Lithuania. It's like...
What is the biggest difference between your home country that you came from and Ireland or Kerry that you think you've seen?
Probably the weather. In Brazil, we got big sunny. Every time it's really, really hot. And here, not every time, but most of the time it's raining. It's really cold.
Irish weather is great.
Weather the same as Louis and like schools, because like time, like a bit of time, like when you start school, like in the morning, and when you finish, so it's too different. So,
when did you start school and finish in Lithuania?
I start 8:30 a.m. and I finish like 4.
And is there any other differences between the school in Lithuania and Kerry that you see?
Weather, and because like in Lithuania it's like summer very hot, no rain, and it's like winter is snow, but in here no snow.
I say the time is different. Like in Brazil, we go like a school. We gotta go to school like 6 a.m. because we finish school early, like 12. Here we finish like 3:45, and we go to school like 8:30. But I think that's happened in Brazil. We leave school early and we go early as well because it's really hot, really, really hot after 12. So it's not good for your skin, you know. It's kind of like it's not good for you, you know. So that's why I think we go, like, we leave early and we go really, really early.
If I could ask, have you faced any challenges when living in Kerry since you've come?
Well, it's language, because, like, when move, it was difficult to speak because English and Lithuania, so...
Did you say people have been welcoming?
Yeah. They how can I say? They, like, hug me. They, like, everyone has helped me so much, you know?
Oh,
yeah.
That's great. Would you have any advice for people in Kerry that would like to know how they can be welcoming to migrants like you?
I don't really know, but, like, everyone here, it's like, everyone is happy, you know? I like them.
Yeah.
They're really, really cool. I don't know what to say.
And for support for young migrants, I believe you're with the GIRC, International
Magda,
Resource
Magda,
Center.
Yeah.
Could you tell us a bit about that?
Yeah, she helped me so much with when I get here, especially because I don't know the language right, so I kind of like distance off friends and stuff like that. But I get here and she like show me like another people who doesn't speak English as well, and now like I'm friends with them, and it's helped me so much.
That's lovely. And what have you found the Truly International Resource Center to be good resource?
Yeah, because like when I come to Terry, then I start to go to class with Magda, and she helped me to improve my English, and now it's much better than it was 1 year ago, like, you know.
Yes. What would you say to any young migrant in Tralee or Kerry that is listening to this right now? Luis, if I can start with you.
They will help you here if you need help.
The support.
You know? Yeah, they support.
And you, Edith, what would you say to a young migrant in Kerry?
Like, in Terry, is much of support, like Magda and Diva, like, help. and like Tuzla can help the same.
And if I could ask also, just is there any supports or activities or sports that you would recommend for any young migrants in Chile? I'll start with you, Luis.
I started doing basketball when I get here, like after 1 month. My coach, my friends from the basketball, they helped me so much, and especially because some of them is from my school, so everyone here is kind of together. So if you have some friend in the basketball, you're gonna have friends in school, so that helped me so much. That's actually support me, because I was kind of scared of I have no friends here, but that don't happen. Just got friends here real quick, and that's really good.
Well, when they come to start to go to these ways, and it's much of groups, like Saturday group, like group for gym on Fridays, and it's much of help and support, so that helped me a lot.
Many young members of Corla Nanog have been working in a focus group to help the experience of young migrants in Kerry.
Last March, as members of Kerry Corla Nanog, we went into the Kerry County Council, in which we took part in a focus group with SIPSI Kerry, which is the Kerry Children and Young People Services Committee, as well as SIPSI Cork and Kerry County Council's Community Integration Forum. The focus group was for a media campaign promoting positive messaging around integration. We were split up into groups, which we were all given a headline based around positive messaging to work on. The two of us were in a group with an older gentleman. We found that the age difference between us and the older gentleman really helped get two different perspectives of the headline we were handed. There was a representation of both Irish people and migrants, making for a very balanced and useful focus group. We later attended the launch of the campaign in June. The mayor of Tralee, Mikey Sheehy, spoke, and SIPSI Kerry representative Claire O'Toole, who is on our steering committee, also made remarks. It was an enjoyable event, and it was good to be consulted on the campaign.
Many migrants wish to make Kerry their home. Maza Ndila is retraining so she can continue her teaching career in the kingdom.
My name is Maza Ndila Mabaso. I'm from Lesotho. I moved to Kerry last year, December.
Lovely. And I believe you are in Kerry to upskill and become a teacher. Could you tell me a bit about that?
Oh, yes. I specialize in visual impairment and intellectual disability. So I want to register with the teaching council and then start teaching, because I'm from Lesotho, but I went to school in University of Botswana. So I've started my process for registering to become a teacher.
What would you say to a young migrant in Kerry if you could talk to any one of them?
I would say that when you come here, the first thing that the person should start from is to look for what to do. Because if you are staying at home and you are not doing anything as a young person, it's not going to be okay. They should find the school. There's a university, there's a college here. There are so many things that they can do. People tend to when they come to a different country, they start misbehaving because they are far from people who know them. I think people should come and respect people at their own space so that things become easier for you.
For more information on the resources available to young migrant people in Kerry, contact NEWKD, the Tralee International Resource Centre, or the KCYS.
The Youth Voice series is brought to you by Radio Kerry and funded by Commissioned Man with a television licence fee.
The Saturday Supplement on Radio Kerry. Brought to you by Quinlan's Fish Shops and Seafood Bars, located across Kerry. Take the fear out of fish and chat to our fishmongers about how to add delicious, easy-to-cook seafood into your menu. Oven and air fryer-ready meals available.
The Youth Voice series is brought to you by Radio Kerry and funded by Commissioned Man with a television licence fee.
On this episode of the Youth Voice series, we're looking at the experience of young LGBT people in Kerry, as well as the resources available to them. We spoke to the people of Tralee to see if they think that there are enough resources for young LGBT people in the county.
Oh, you're really speaking my language, and I really hope that people not just hear this, but listen to this. We're all a member of our beautiful community, and the more interconnected and interrelated we are, it enriches all of our lives. But the short answer is, unfortunately, no. No, I don't see too much of anything going on for LGBT. And maybe we need to be more visual and more audio about the question, the answer, the situation. You know, we need to get talking to each other. But the short answer is no.
I'm not sure. I'm not familiar with that. So I really truthfully can't answer that. Yeah, you know, it's somebody that would be involved in the organisation. We may be able to tell you more about that.
I'm not sure about that. I wouldn't be familiar with that organisation at all. But
I don't think so. I mean, I'm not from here, though. What I can see, I don't think so.
Oh, okay.
I do think that there are a good amount, but there can always be more resources.
I personally am not part of the community, but I've seen over the last while there definitely has been improvement in the amount of time and, you know, people supporting it over the last while.
Yeah, I definitely think so. I see around the time of June and July, there's a lot of Pride events around Tralee and around Kerry in general. So yeah, I think we've got a good community here.
I think that there is some resources, but I think that we could always have more and be a bit better. As someone a part of the community myself, I think everyone around here is generally accepting, but again, a few more resources wouldn't go amiss.
Daniel Kirk runs Scene in Kerry, an LGBT support group that showcases the resources available to young LGBT people in the county. As well as running Kingdom Pride, Daniel is also passionate about ensuring that every LGBT young person has access to the resources that they need to thrive.
My name is Daniel Kirk Foundy and my pronouns are he, him.
How would you like people to describe you or to be described?
I am a queer man myself. I'm also the LGBT plus community support worker for Kerry. So I'm working in Listowel Family Resource Centre, but covering the entire county of Kerry for LGBT related resources for individuals as well as businesses and organisations.
Can you tell us a bit about Scene?
Yeah, absolutely. So Scene is one of the groups that we run. We've been running Scene for, I think, about 5 years now. And it is a resource for LGBT plus individuals in Kerry. We have a website, sceneinkerry.com, where you can access information, resources, my own contact information is on there, as well as kind of all of the things that we have going on throughout the year. So we have multiple support groups and opportunities for people to meet up. Scene in Kerry itself meets once a month throughout the year across Kerry. So people can come, they can meet me, they can meet each other, discuss LGBT-related matters. It is for LGBT people over the age of 18, as well as parents, friends, family, anyone working with LGBT people, or anyone who just has a question they'd like to ask.
What work do you do?
Yeah, so we run a lot of workshops. It depends really on who's asking and what they're asking for. So I go into secondary schools, speak with the staff as well as the students. I go into organisations and businesses to educate them on working with LGBT plus either service users or staff members. We work with youth groups, other charities, community organisations, and just whoever else comes in, like such as the HSE or anyone who's looking for more information on a specific topic.
What would you like the young people of Kerry to know about Scene?
I think the main thing that I would want them to know, and something I would have wanted to know back when I was a young person growing up in Kerry myself, is that the resources are out there. There's, I think at the moment, about 5 LGBT youth groups running in Kerry, as well as loads of other resources for parents, for family members. There's loads of information for people to access if they're looking for it, the support groups. And there is a community out there. It's quite a large community. So the community is here. It's just a matter of finding it.
Are there any upcoming events you'd like to highlight?
As I said, all of our stuff is available on either sceneinkerry.com or we have our social media, so Facebook or Instagram. We have Scene in Kerry, we have Trans Kerry Support Group and Kingdom Pride in Kerry, all run by myself. So if you're looking for kind of what to do, Scene in Kerry is the place to check out. We run support groups throughout the year, every month, as well as we do community walks on a Sunday once a month, as well as a kind of one-off events such as Kingdom Pride, or we should have something coming up now around Christmas as well. So kind of keep an eye there if you're looking for what's going on. The Kingdom Pride in Kerry as it is now is run by Listowel Family Resource Centre. It started in 2021. I came on board in 2022 and I've been working here since then. So we've kind of built on the foundations of what was kind of discussed during our research in 2019. And then obviously COVID kind of prevented a lot from happening. But since then, it's just been going from strength to strength. And the more people who know about us, the more people come out and enjoy the festivities. We have a very community-led and community-based Pride. A lot of events for all age groups, you know, not just what you typically think of a Pride event. So loads of kind of health and well-being stuff. Over the years, we've done things like yoga, kayaking, walks, sea swims, coffee mornings, bowling, there's a lot kind of going on that you wouldn't typically expect, but it's all very well attended and doing very, very well. So we've running 5 years now. And as I said, just going from strength to strength, we cover the entire county. So we kind of, I aim to start kind of up North Kerry and work our way down as we go. And then kind of have our main day either between Tralee and Killarney, every second year, every third year. And then if anyone would like to get involved or if anyone has any ideas of things they'd like to see, I'd love to hear them as well if people would like to get in touch. Email is probably the best way to get me. My email is daniel.quirk@listolefrc.ie or again through those social media routes as well.
How do you feel about the level of support available to young people in Kerry?
As I said, I grew up in Tralee myself and it was a bit of a lonely existence. There didn't seem to be a huge amount going on. But as I've kind of, you know, grown up and come back into working in the sector myself as an adult, there's so much available through the KCYS, through other groups such as ourselves, through family resource centres. There's a huge amount going on. There's schools seem to really be wanting to know more, wanting to do better, wanting to educate. Like we'll have now coming up in November, we'll have this Stand Up Awareness Week that's kind of based off of Belong To's work. And that's a great time for education for young people as well and to get involved.
What is your opinion on the intersectionality of being a young LGBT plus person?
Yeah, I think we've come on a long way. There's always going to be more work we can do. I think kind of, again, comparing it to my own youth and kind of what I'm seeing now through my work, it's changed quite a lot in what the barriers are. The big thing that we're coming up against and what I hear over and over again through my work and through the workshops and talking to schools and other organisations is there seems to be a lot of misinformation, particularly coming from online, from social media. There seems to be a lot of kind of 24/7 access to either misinformation, to bullying, to these kind of outside influences. That's really quite unfortunate and I'm not sure where we can go with that. But as I said, if we ground ourselves back into what is available and the positives that we have these resources, we have these groups, we have these supports, this counselling available through various sources, and bring ourselves back to reality a little bit and back to education, like I said, through Stand Up Week and things like that, where we can, you know, reach out to these young people, whether they're LGBT or not, and kind of explain what the situation is, what the story is, what it's like to be an LGBT person, and that there is a very positive future. Ireland has come on a huge way over the last 30, 35 years to being an incredibly progressive country, an incredibly safe country to be in as an LGBT person. And I think we need to promote that more and have that more known. I think the best thing that anyone could ever do is just to listen. If somebody would like to talk about their identity or something that they're going through, to sit down and listen to them and give them the space to vocalise what they're going through and what they'd like to talk about. And then if there needs to be education there, there's some great resources online, either through the HSC or through charities like Belong To, or either through myself, you can get in contact. I'm more than happy to sit down with parents, have a cup of coffee and go through their concerns, their worries, any confusion they might have around different kind of terminology and stuff. Absolutely no problem at all. And reach out to the resources that are there if the young person needs support. To find it and to access it, as well as for the parents or whoever else may be in need of it. I think the main thing that I'd like everyone to know is that the community exists, that it's here, and that we're waiting, and we're happy to have anyone who'd like to be involved to join in. So if they'd like to reach out to us, if they'd like to either meet one-on-one or in groups, it's all available. It's just a matter of joining in.
The Youth Voice series is brought to you by Radio Kerry and funded by Commissioned Man with a television licence fee.
The Saturday Supplement on Radio Kerry. Brought to you by Quinlan's Fish Shops and Seafood Bars located across Kerry. Supplement your diet with a healthy and fresh dinner option. Fresh seafood from Quinlan.
The Youth Voice series is brought to you by Radio Kerry and funded by Commissioned Man with a television licence fee.
But how have things changed for young LGBT people in Ireland over the last couple of decades? We spoke to Sinead Walsh, creator and producer of the Queer Os Fluch podcast, which examines how queer acceptance and culture has changed in Ireland over the last century.
So my name's Sinead Walsh and I use they, them pronouns.
How would you like people to describe you? Or
I suppose, how does anyone want to be described, really? I suppose kind would be always be lovely. Definitely funny, I suppose, kind of my career. And I'd be pretty happy with tolerable, I suppose.
Would you like to tell us a bit about your career?
Yeah, so I'm a stand-up comedian, and I've been doing that for nearly 7 years now, and I'm a podcaster as well.
Could you tell us a bit about your podcast?
Yeah, absolutely. So my podcast is Queer as Fluck, and it is based around Irish queer history. So we started a couple of years ago. Now, there's been two seasons.
What inspired you to start your podcast, if you don't mind me asking?
Yeah, sure. So I was at a memorial in Fairview Park a couple of years ago for Declan Flynn. And when I was there, there were a lot of speakers, and I heard from a couple of people who I had never heard of before, and nor would you hear of them, and they were people that maybe would have worked with Declan in a, you know, an underground gay bar, or you know, people who knew him from various contexts in life. And it just really struck me that a lot of those stories, the ones that you wouldn't typically hear, were completely fascinating, as you can imagine. So I just went looking for people who I suppose you wouldn't hear from all that often, you know, the stories untold kind of thing. And so between myself and my partner is my wonderful producer, Emer McGindy. So between the two of us, we found some stories that I suppose you wouldn't hear from the most, and became a series backed by Acast, which was awesome. So and that's kind of where the idea came from, and how it unfolded. The whole point of it is telling stories that typically go untold. I'm happy that those stories are out there, and I suppose I travel a lot for comedy, and when I do travel, I try and find queer bookstores a lot, and you know, there's always British queer history sections and American queer history sections, but so rarely Irish ones. I guess getting it out there in audio format is pretty important. And I suppose I would just like, you know, not just young people, but people from all over Ireland to understand that, you know, Irish queer history is just as rich and just as worth talking about as, you know, British or US queer history, because I think we truly do stand on the shoulders of giants. A lot of the time, you know, the white cis male representation when it comes to LGBT is very palatable for a lot of people. I'm just going to use the likes of Brian Dowling, say, for example. You know, a lot of people, and listen, I love Brian, don't get me wrong, I've loved him since he was in Big Brother when I was a kid, but you know, that kind of gay best friend is very palatable for a lot of Irish people. I think where it gets a bit trickier is queer people that push the envelope a little bit and wouldn't typically be seen as your gay best friend. I think lesbian representation has always been a bit of a challenge as well, but certainly, in the modern era, I don't think there's enough trans people out there. And I think, when I say out there, I mean in, you know, that are being portrayed by the media. But I do think what is out there isn't always overwhelmingly positive. So yeah, that is something that I would like to see improve moving forward.
Do you think is there any specific ways you would like to see things improve?
I suppose more conversations around like trans lives, non-binary identity, that kind of thing. So for example, the Gender Recognition Act that was brought in about 10 years ago covers a lot of kind of a lot of bases in terms of trans people being officially recognised by the state. But what one thing it doesn't address is, you know, non-binary identities and stuff. And I think that needs to be changed. There's not enough being done to change that. And I really feel that a lot of that concern or grey area weirdness can be alleviated through conversations and just showing, you know, the general public that actually, you know, trans people, non-binary people are exactly like everyone else. You know, we want to just live our lives, walk our dogs, work our jobs, you know, And I feel like that hasn't really been portrayed, I suppose. I think I often say, you know, the US sneezes and Ireland catches a cold. It's certainly the same with the UK. The UK sneezes and Ireland catches a cold. So obviously there's been a regression of trans rights in the UK over the last few months, yeah, if not years, and a lot of hostility towards trans people, well, certainly on the rise anyway. So yeah, I think it's something that Ireland needs to be very aware of and take action and be proactive in terms of protecting the lives and rights of its trans citizens.
We spoke to a young member of the LGBT community about his experience and what can be done to improve life for a young LGBT person in Kerry and beyond.
The LGBT community didn't really have much of a factor in my childhood. It's only kind of really when I was older, in my later teens, that I kind of started to make that connection with the LGBT community.
So in your late teens, would that be like when you were in school or maybe more college age?
As secondary school, so like say leaving cert cycle.
And did you feel like safe in school? Did you feel like you could be yourself, or did you feel like you had to protect yourself?
I always felt safe, like in terms of who I was as a person. Mm-hmm. And as much as my connections with the LGBTQ community is a part of me, it isn't so much a part of me where I would feel like I would need to shelter myself off from any of my peers, my classmates, and my colleagues.
Did you feel like the school itself was supportive? Did you feel like if you needed anything, you could go to them?
The staff were, yeah. I felt like if I did like come out or went to one of my teachers and said, hey, this is who I am, that they would be supportive, of course. The thing is, since it was, I went to school in secondary school in St. Michael's College, Listowel, which is an all-boys school. So there's that element to it. And I don't know if you've experienced this yourself, but when you're talking about an all-boys school, kind of like leaving cert cycle, it's more of a case of them being, oh, it's the boys, it's the lads, the fellas, even, as you would say. But I don't think that would have played a factor. By that stage, I kind of had my friend groups, my people that I kind of talk to on a regular basis, both like in school, like out of school, online, that sort of thing. So I don't think that it would have been too much trouble or too much of a difficulty if I did decide to not come out, but like tell them, hey, this is who I am. I feel like the supports in terms of the services are there, yeah, but I do think that once you start going more outside of Kerry, even in some places within Kerry, it's not really that the services aren't there, it's just the people, their viewpoints can be a bit different, whether that's just a lack of understanding or a lack of wanting to understand. I don't know, I don't speak for everybody, but I think at least in Kerry anyways, there's definitely a lot of like supports in terms of services, organizations, people whose job it is to help those struggling with LGBTQ and other such things.
Is there anything that people from Kerry can do to just make sure that young LGBT people or just LGBT people in general feel welcome and safe and like they can be themselves and talk to their non-LGBT or their LGBT friends and peers? Like, do you have anything you would like Kerry people to do?
I think just don't do anything out of the ordinary. Treat them as a normal person, because at the end of the day, that's what they are. You wouldn't, I know maybe years ago, decades ago, people mightn't treat people of color as the same as themselves. But you start to see that if I have a black friend, if I have an Indian friend, I'm not going to talk to them, treat them differently than I would, say, my white friend. You shouldn't do that with your gay friend or your trans friend or your bi friend either. They're just normal people. They just have different orientations, different beliefs, and different things that make them unique.
For more information on the resources available to young LGBT people in Kerry, contact Scene in Kerry, Jigsaw, Kingdom Pride, or the KCYS.
The Youth Voice series is brought to you by Radio Kerry and funded by Commissioned Man with a television licence fee.
Yeah, that was two more episodes of Radio Kerry's Youth Voice series, which is giving young people around Kerry the chance to explore all the different resources and opportunities for them around the county. It's a joint collaboration between Radio Kerry, Kerry ETB, Tusla Jigsaw and KCYS. And this morning we looked at the resources on offer for young migrants and young members of the LGBT plus community in Kerry. And the two episodes were produced by members of the Youth Voice group, Nell Moore Ryan, Christian Glazier, Joseph Gazzito and Brendan Locke Fitzgerald. The Youth Voice series is brought to you by Radio Kerry and funded by Commission Man with the television licence fee. And as I said earlier, links to the previous Youth Voice series programmes are available on the podcast section of the Radio Kerry website. And thanks to Siobhan Brosnan as well for putting those together. That's all we have time for on the programme this morning. My thanks to Niamh Daly, who was on sound. Francis is on the way, so keep it here on Radio Kerry. And like I mentioned earlier, Frank Lewis is on next Saturday, so I'll talk to you again the following Saturday. Remember to send your photos in to jmcgill@radiokerry.ie. And the theme was August Time in Kerry. Until then, look after yourself and take care.
The Saturday Supplement on Radio Kerry. Brought to you by Quinlan's Fish Shops and Seafood Bars located across Kerry. Because at least one day of the weekend should involve someone else doing all the cooking. Order your delicious takeaway from Quinlan's today.